Welcome to Guide to the Cosmos on webtalkradio.net with your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni, physicist, public speaker, and author of Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, and his new second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident? With Robert as our guide to the cosmos, we will explore the frontiers of science and participate in the exciting discoveries of physics, astronomy, and cosmology. Now, providing public access to science, here's your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni.
Thank you for tuning in, and welcome back. We have a great show for you today, and we also have a great limited-time free offer for our radio listeners. So go to guidetothecosmos.com and click on the word free, and we'll send you a spectacular album of celestial images complete with descriptions. This is something that you'll enjoy sharing with your family and friends as you explore the cosmos. So hurry and go to guidetothecosmos.com and click on the word free. We can all remember free, can't we? I wanted to do a show on a group called Gavert because they provide radio telescope time for schools. Little did I know how much more they really have achieved. So throughout the interview, check out how long it takes me to figure out just what a wonderful organization this really is. Today we're going to learn all about the Goldstone Apple Valley Radio Telescope. We will be talking to its president and CEO, Rick Piercy. Rick, welcome to our show.
Hey, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So, Rick, tell us all about the Lewis Center for Educational Research there in Apple Valley. What is it all about?
Well, that's a great question because it really had an interesting beginning. I was a kindergarten teacher at Mojave Mesa Elementary School here in Apple Valley, teaching remedial reading to first graders in the afternoon and my kindergarten class in the morning. And really, the remedial class was a difficult class to teach. It was a lot of kids just continually trying to sound out little three-letter words. So I went to my principal and to our staff and asked them if I could start something that was brand new, the Young Astronauts Program from NASA. We thought it would be exciting for kids. And I said to the teachers, I guess very naively, why don't you not send me your kids that are gifted? Send me kids who are tactile kinesthetic learners. Send me kids who want to do things hands-on. And they heard me say I could send them my five behavior problems in the afternoon. So I had 150 students, 30 a day, that I saw, and we did all sorts of project-based learning. We made space food, and we looked at the stars and did a lot of things. And December 10th, 1985, Halley's Comet was up. I invited the kids to bring their families and look through an old telescope we had at school at the comet. And I remember my wife saying, you know, you want to eat dinner before you go? And I said, oh, you know, most of these kids don't come to anything at school. I'll probably be back in an hour. And actually got to school. There were 200 people lined up. They stayed till 1 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And that was the kickoff for us to ask our school district and our community to help us build and raise the money for an observatory on an elementary campus.
Now, tell us again the ages of these kids.
They were first through sixth grade.
First through sixth.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we.
So that was the start of the Lewis Center then.
That was the start of the center and our love for astronomy. We started the High Desert Astronomical Society. Got about 640 volunteers in our small town to come and help with that. We raised in cash and in-kind donations $1.2 million to build the Science Center and the observatory. Got the Air Force to donate a jet flight simulator. And began our programs. And about 1996, we had heard that that an antenna out at Goldstone, the Deep Space Tracking Network, was going to be decommissioned and torn down. And DSS-12 was the antenna that had communicated with the Apollo astronauts. And it just seemed like there were things we could do with that antenna for education instead of just tearing this historic piece of equipment down. And so we contacted Congressman Lewis, who has been a friend and a real help to us since the beginning. And he contacted his friend Dan Golden, who was the administrator at NASA under three presidents. And Mr. Golden came out with a group of his people from Washington and actually visited our observatory and our science center. And we talked about what we wanted to do with the radio telescope. And lo and behold, the first time, I guess, in NASA's history, they turned over this huge piece of equipment to this little school in Apple Valley, and that's how we got the Goldstone Apple Valley Radio Telescope program off the ground.
So this, they turned over a radio telescope, state-of-the-art telescope that had served its purpose, to an elementary school.
Basically, yeah. It's,
well, fantastic. So what do you think that telescope was worth?
Well, you know, it's estimated at about, I think, $12 to $15 million.
So that's probably more than your supply budget there.
It's more than a lot of our budgets, but you know, that was back when we were really small, and I was at that point, I was the principal of the school where I'd been the kindergarten teacher running the observatory, and another friend of mine, Jim Roller, another teacher, was running the GATE program, the Gifted and Talented program out of there. It was a wild time, but we took over this, you know, it's a 34-meter antenna. It weighs 500 tons.
This is as big as a football field.
It's big. Well, it's big. It's a quarter of an acre. It's dish covered.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Now, does
a
telescope like that just sit there and run itself, or do you guys have to do a lot of maintenance to keep it working?
Well, actually, that's part of our partnership is NASA and their contractors keep it running at their site. We provide all the people at our site in our Mission Control Center. Since the time of just the Science Center, we've expanded. We were able, through a lot of fundraising, to purchase 150 acres on the Mojave River here in Apple Valley. We created charter schools from those early days. We now have the Academy for Academic Excellence here in Apple Valley, which has about almost 1,400 students and a waiting list of 2,600.
Oh, my goodness, really. Now, for those that don't know California geography, Apple Valley is located about an hour or two north of Los Angeles?
It's about 90 miles from Los Angeles on the I-15 freeway on the way to Vegas.
So I see. So that's either 90 minutes or 3 hours, depending on traffic. Huh?
Yeah. Friday afternoon, it's a two-day trip.
It's a two-day trip. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, but, great.
Yeah, it's in the middle of the desert, and we took over this antenna, and since that time have grown to have a charter school here, and actually were asked to replicate in the city of San Bernardino, so we have the Norton Space and Aeronautics Academy there.
Okay, and what kind of students get into this program, and what kind of students can have access to the telescope?
Well, if you remember back to the kids I talked about when we first started, what we believe is that children need to learn with project-based education, and our schools are laboratory schools, part of the National Association of Lab Schools, and University of California at Riverside is our research partner. And so we believe that we should take any kids, because if our programs work, if they work just for a specific group or a gifted group of students, it just wouldn't be something we could replicate. So we use a blind lottery. And any child can attend that is picked in the lottery. We have a fairly high a number of special education students, about 11% of our kids, and they run every socioeconomic and ethnic group. So any child that just comes up and is randomly drawn can come into the school.
And from how large an area do you draw students? I mean, how many miles do they come to attend this school?
We actually have students that parents drive them 30 miles.
30 miles.
So, yeah.
So these are dedicated parents.
They are fairly dedicated parents, but there's also a lot of them that are dedicated wanting to get their kids into a place where they really learn. And so it's
well,
true.
That's a wonderful thing too, all by itself. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. And we're one of the highest scoring high schools now in our two-county area, Riverside and San Marino County, and one of the top schools in the state, and we think our programs work well because of the hands-on activities that we do with kids, especially Gabbert.
Gabbert being the radio telescope.
That's right.
Yeah. So what kind of activities do they do on the radio telescope, and what sort of things do you look at?
Well, you know, the students, and it's not just our students at the school, but we actually serve students in 37 states, 14 countries, three U.S. territories. About 32,000 students around the world use Gabbert.
Mm-hmm.
So these students study planets. They monitor seasonal changes on Uranus. They track scintillating flux density of mysterious black holes.
Mm.
Next year, we'll be doing the galactic plane with the SETI project.
Mm.
And in fact, we were the main station for monitoring LCROSS, and we had students all over the world monitoring LCROSS as its mission, 114 days to the moon.
Describe the mission of LCROSS for us.
Well, LCROSS was the Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite that NASA launched this last year and looked for water on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And so the LCROSS mission was one of the, it was interesting because it was a mission that was run on a shoestring budget.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they used parts from past missions to build the spacecraft and kind of off-the-shelf items. And they didn't have the resources to track the spacecraft 24 hours a day. The time on most of NASA's antennas is pretty well taken up.
I see.
Using another antenna that we've since taken over halftime, DSS-13, students from across the country, around the world, were able to track for 114 days monitoring the spacecraft from its launch, where we NASA invited some students to the launch to Mount Wilson. We had 400 people here at our center during the time of impact.
Mm.
And so people watched it in Puerto Rico. They were on tracking in a number of countries. So
Puerto Rico, that would be the Arecibo radio telescope?
They were using ours. They were tracking from our telescope. So they just go online,
mm-hmm,
and take control, and the kids run it. Everywhere we have curriculum from kindergarten all the way through grade 14. We just last Friday had our first middle college come on. Middle Tennessee State University came on last Friday and ran the telescope. So
this is fantastic. So kids from Puerto Rico or what did you say, Middle State College in Tennessee?
Yes, they're from all over.
Some elementary school in South L.A. can get on the internet and direct and orient this telescope that's as big as a football field and look at the center of the galaxy.
They can look out.
Or the moon.
The galaxy. Yeah.
Yeah, or the planets.
They track black holes that are billions of light years away.
Billions of light years away. You are listening to Guide to the Cosmos on WebTalkRadio.net. I am your host, Robert Piccioni, and we're speaking today with Rick Percy, who is the president and CEO of the Goldstone Apple Valley Radio Telescope, providing access to the heavens to school kids across the country. We'll be right back after these messages. When you're planning a cruise, the best place for comparing prices and itineraries is cruisedirect.com. You can choose your cruise by destination, cruise line, or budget. cruisedirect.com is your online destination for cruising.
Explore Dr. Piccioni's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts that are available to you, our radio audience. Robert's first book, Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, makes the exciting discoveries of modern physics, astronomy, and cosmology understandable for everyone. And it was just selected as the best science book of the year by National Best Books. As Robert says, you don't have to be a great musician to appreciate great music, and the same is true for science. If you can change money, you can understand Einstein. Robert's second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident?, describes how precisely tuned the universe is to support life, and shows how amazingly improbable that is. Go to Robert's website and send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future shows. That's guidetothecosmos.com.
We're back, talking with Rick Percy, the president and CEO of the Goldstone Apple Valley Radio Telescope Center, the Lewis Center for Educational Research. To what extent do the kids participate in picking the targets?
Actually NASA picks them, because this project is not just letting children kind of look around. It's real data used by real scientists at NASA. So, for instance, the Juno project is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Juno is going to be a spacecraft that goes to Jupiter and really gets into the deep atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And that spaceflight is the next big mission that NASA will be flying to one of our planets.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to look and investigate the existence of a solid planetary core. They're going to map Juno or Jupiter's intense magnetic fields.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to measure the amount of water and ammonia in the deep atmosphere. And having the ability to have these 32,000 kids and their teachers do all this research really provides NASA with an in-depth amount of data that they couldn't otherwise get just by the sheer numbers of people.
You know, yeah.
32,000 kids is, what, twice NASA's entire personnel.
Hmm. How long does it take you to train, you know, a third grader to be able to do something constructive with that telescope?
Well, you know, third graders are much easier to train than adults. So we're talking probably 10 minutes.
10 minutes, I see.
It really doesn't take long. Our IT department has, and our curriculum developers have all done an outstanding job of providing very user-friendly interfaces on their computers as well as live video feeds.
Mm-hmm.
That they can see the telescope, and then we have operators, mission specialists that are in mission control, and the students can actually see them too. There's a video feed inside of mission control that they mm-hmm. can talk to the operators. So the operators walk them through the steps. We train teachers. We train them here at our site and at some remote sites for 5 days. But we're really looking at moving towards an online training that'll make it much easier, much less expensive for teachers to get the training they need to get that into classrooms.
What fraction of all students these days have had their fingers on a keyboard before?
Oh, I would imagine up in the 90% or higher.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
there are very few kids that
So when you say it's easier to train a third grader than an adult, that's because they've really been born with computers.
That's right. We call the young people that we have, they're really technology natives.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us are technology immigrants.
I see, right. Okay, so let's say there's a teacher somewhere in Kansas.
Okay.
That has students that are eager to participate. How does that teacher get in touch with you guys and get things rolling so that they too can benefit from all this?
Well, the easiest way is just to go to our website, which is Lewis Center, and it's L-E-W-I-S,
mm-hmm.
lewiscenter.org. When they get there, they just need to go to the global programs and look at Gabbert. There is an entire section there designed just to help them get online. So when they go to global programs and click on that bar, Gabbert is the first thing that comes up. It has all the missions, how to join the Gabbert team,
mm-hmm.
Links, the Jupiter Quest lessons, which were the first lessons we developed.
Mm-hmm.
There's the mission control video. There's a map of all the schools that are on. Everything that you would need to know to get into Gabbert is on that site.
Okay, so I'll post that link on my website. I mean, anybody that's hearing this radio show will know how to get to my website. And can I include your telephone number as well?
Sure. And in fact, it's on there under as well under the locations, but our phone number is 760-946-5414. And actually, the extension that works best for our Gabbert program is Kim Bunnell, and she's at extension 234.
234.
234.
Okay, so all those numbers and the links will be on my website for those of you that are commuting to work in the morning and don't have a pencil handy? And what about homeschooled kids? Do you have a program to include them as well?
We do. At this point, that's why we're hoping, too, to go on to an online training to help those parents. But we've had a number of homeschoolers engage. Probably the best way is to go to Lewis Learning, which is a program we've developed right now for anybody. But on that site, there's a number of curriculum developed, including animations that we've developed.
This sounds like a fabulous project. From your point of view, Rick, what do you see the students getting out of their participation in Gabbert?
You know, that is one of the questions that we've been asked more than ever than any other, and we've tracked our students and begun to track both here and others. The first and most important thing, I think, is that they get a love for science. What we tell our students is that, you know, if science is what happens to you all around you, there are wonderful, beautiful things out in space to look at, and there are things under a microscope to look at, and science is just everything about every day and what goes on. And the beauty of Gabbert is that it teaches the language of science, which is mathematics. So we tell our students, if you're going to share your knowledge, if you're going to be able to communicate in a global community, you need to be able to speak the language of science and technology, and that's math. And mathematics is a foreign language. So we help teachers and we help students understand that all of this is not only relevant, it can be rigorous, and it can have relationships with the children, that they understand that science is such an important part of what goes on in their lives, and that it's fun. So we're a very project-based and project-oriented place.
That's a well-kept secret, that science is actually fun.
Yeah, well, unless you're... But we want kids to have a great time. We want them to love coming to school and love learning. And we've been monitoring our students. And at this point, here at the campus at our lab school, 85% of our students now go on to college.
Oh, my goodness. Really?
99 to 100% graduate from high school. Very low dropout rate, obviously.
So the enthusiasm that they develop in your program for science, that seems like that it carries over to other subject matter as well.
It does. We have students in medical school. We have them learning about, in drama and music, about how science is so important in projection of voice, and even in sports. You know, there's a lot of physics when you hit a baseball. So we just try to make everything we do relevant to what children need to learn, and then just make it rigorous and put them together with real scientists like NASA scientists, where their data is absolutely essential to the projects they're working on. So there's some there's a little stress there that goes along. And,
there's a challenge.
That's right.
Yeah.
Our first scientist from JPL that started with us was Dr. Michael Klein. He's since passed away, but what a beautiful man. And he had a quote, and I think this sums it all up. He says about Gabbert, "Scientific discovery is possible. Personal discovery is assured."
Absolutely. So these kids learn that with dedication and enthusiasm that they can succeed.
They can more than succeed.
And that's a lesson that they could apply to any aspect of their life.
It is. It is. It's a work ethic that demonstrates that work doesn't have to be drudgery. It can be exciting and fun.
And that they, too, can be successful. I mean, I presume not all these kids have, you know, come from a situation in which they see a lot of success examples. I mean, you know, that's true for kids anywhere, right? Some kids come from very successful households and some don't. You know, the United States is home to a lot of immigrants and always has been. And these people are, you know, trying to find a way to become successful in society, and so this is a big step for a lot of these kids, I'm sure. Do you offer these services to schools outside the United States?
The schools that we have so far in our program are the military schools, the schools of the U.S. military overseas, and recently we were able to open that up more to a school in Colombia, and we're talking to schools in China, because DSS-12 has been taken off the ITAR list.
Now, is there a cost associated with a school or an individual signing up to be part of your program?
The training at this point is $745 for the 5-day training for the teachers, and then they have to pay their travel expenses. However, when we go to and we're moving towards online training, we believe we can reduce that cost tremendously down, mm-hmm. Not have the travel, and to allow people to take the training different times. There are some things you need to know as a teacher of how to integrate this. We believe you can integrate it thematically into all subject areas. Of course, math and science are the main ones, but mm-hmm. we have schools where all the staff gets involved in Gabbert, and they teach the history of science. They mm-hmm. teach grant writing and proposal writing as part of scientific methods. So there are a lot of ways for us to integrate that into the entire curriculum, but usually it's math and science teachers or elementary teachers that want to bring a new dimension to their school. And then they usually rotate. One teacher trained can rotate an entire school through to run the telescope. So
the charge is for the individual teacher, and there's no charge for the students?
None for the students.
Okay, wonderful. Well, is there anything else that you should tell us about Gabbert?
It's been a great program, and we've had really incredible support from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, from NASA especially. The folks at NASA have just been spectacular with our kids. I have to tell you that a number of the students that we have that do exceptional jobs come from our special ed programs.
Mm-hmm.
We've done programs with autistic children that have worked well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just fascinating to see kids get turned on by this, and then to see the scientists that come and work with them, and to see, and I know you went to Caltech, and
mm-hmm.
You see some of these guys who have been in the world of academia for a long time. They're scientists, they're world class, they're known, and then to walk in and sit down cross-legged with a group of kindergartners and try to explain synchrotron emissions is something to behold.
Oh, so, I would have a great deal of respect for anyone that tried that, yes.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a challenge.
They do a great job.
And so, Rick, you're really a bridge. I mean, teachers can come to you from all over the world, and you are the connection between them. I mean, you're a teacher, so you speak their language, and
uh-huh.
you will connect directly to NASA and all this high-tech, you know, JPL. I mean, one of the premier technology institutions in all the world. I mean, you guys are right at the forefront there. And you're bringing kindergartners into this.
It is going to be, and it is critically important for us to do this work and for other schools to do this work, because the 21st century is going to rely on our country to stay where we are financially and in the world as a power. We're going to have to be ahead in technology and science and math. And we've got a ways to go, and
mm-hmm.
we're a small country in consideration of the entire world's population.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of the bridges to many programs that could be out there. And besides teachers, we'd love to have professional scientists, amateur scientists, especially astronomers who are interested in working with kids and getting them turned on to science
mm-hmm.
to contact us as well.
Oh, I see. Okay, so you're looking for volunteers among the scientific community as well.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What a great thing. Okay, so once again, your website information and telephone number will be posted on my website, and you're basically putting out an open offer to schools across the entire country and maybe even beyond to participate mm-hmm. in frontier research in astronomy using the radio telescope that you have there at Goldstone Apple Valley. So, Rick, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. That's a tremendous accomplishment that you guys have put together there at the Lewis Center. And if only we had hundreds of more inventions like that in all sorts of different fields, education in this country would just take a giant leap forward.
That's what we want to do.
You guys have done. I didn't realize what I was getting into. I'm really blown away. That's
uh-huh.
fantastic. Thank you very much for joining us today, Rick.
Well, thank you, and thanks for the time. It really was appreciated.
Thank you for tuning in today. And remember, you are never too young or too old to wonder why.
Don't forget to explore Robert's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts on his books that are available to you, our radio audience. Send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future show topics. That's guidetothecosmos.com. Goodbye.